Today's Veterans Radio program is being dedicated to the CBs and to Gary Little and his remembrance as being a part of Veterans Radio.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Bob Gould.
Good morning, America. Good morning to all my brothers and sisters out there from the military. It's a special day today. It's the one-year anniversary of the passing of Gary Little. Today's program will be an interview with Gary that was conducted on June the 5th, 2010. It was at that time that the three of us, the founders of Veterans Radio, Gary, Lily, Dale Throneberry, and myself, at subsequent programs, we were giving our personal bios. And the last one that we did was Gary. So we're going to be playing that. Yeah, it's Gary Little Raw. Yeah, you got it. Raw and uncut. I love that. Going to be talking about a military's personal life. And with me in the studio today is Mr. John Kinzinger.
Good morning, Robert.
We're going to have to talk about that. And Vance McCrum. Of course, you all know about Vance. Both John and Vance are members of the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310 in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the VFW 423. Vance and John, once again.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Good morning, Bob.
It's been a year, and I know life goes on, and things just keep happening. And what, John, you first, what have you felt in this past year as a result of Gary not being around?
You know, Bob, Gary was, he was high energy, anything related to veterans. In our community, we seem to have lost some of that energy with Gary's passing, and it's just, he's missed, there's no doubt about it. No matter what it was, if it had anything to do with helping veterans, Gary was involved. And, you know, we need some other people to step up and fill in his shoes. I don't know if that could ever be done, but Gary could certainly be involved in everything. No one knows all that Gary was involved in. I'm a very good...
I know. I've been trying to keep up with this myself. I looked at some of the emails that we have, and did you know he did this? Did you know he did that? I know he did a lot with you, John.
Right. We were very close friends for about 20 years since when he first started in VVA. You know, I watched Gary grow in his ambition to help all veterans, and it was his goal.
Vance, how about you? It's been a year, and what have you noticed has been that void?
It there's a big hole now, specifically within our VVA chapter and the VFW chapter. I didn't know Gary as long as John. I only knew Gary approximately maybe 9 or 10 years. And when I really first got acquainted with him was when I took over the membership of the VVA 310, and there was a state convention going on up north, up in the Upper Peninsula, all the way up to the tip up there, where John's son went to college. Mm-hmm. And so John and or Jerry, Gary and I rode on up there together, and I knew nobody there, but Gary knew everybody. Everybody up there knew Gary Little and stopped to talk with him. And it was amazing. It was an amazing to witness and to, you know, to see that.
His smile was so infectious.
And his laugh, too, Bob.
His laugh, his smile. And it was so infectious, and it was so real.
Yes.
That's what I remember. And traveling with Gary was, I did. I traveled with Gary down in Ohio and up to Grayling, and it, no pun intended, but it was a trip. I mean, we're all sitting here nodding our heads. Well, somebody is on the phone right now. Gary, myself, Ken Rogge, and Dale Throneberry, we were all the beginners here at Veterans Radio. And on the air right now is Mr. Dale Throneberry. Dale, how are you this morning?
I'm doing fine, Bob, and morning to John and Vance also. And it's kind of interesting. I was down here in Uniontown, I think it's Pennsylvania anyway, where George Marshall, the Marshall Plan, was born, and there's statues of the guy all over town. And as I was driving around, I just kept thinking of Gary and saying, boy, would he really like this place? Because he was a big, big Marshall Plan fan.
Uh-huh.
And I have to tell you, Bob, and to our listeners, I kind of intentionally was out of town this weekend. It's just so upsetting to think that it's been a year that he's been gone. And, you know, we miss him, obviously, very much, as does everybody else that even ever came in contact with Gary Lilly. And I think that you have to, you know, trying to put it in perspective and listening to you guys talk about the void and how we have to figure out a way to fill it with, you know, either ourselves or with younger people, or, you know, start pulling some more veterans out of the woodwork to get them involved, because he was just, you know, he was a veteran's veteran, I guess you could say, and that's, you know, that was his goal in life, is to help us. And it's so fortunate, I guess, sadly, that he found that love and lust, or, you know, passion for that cause, you know, so late in life, but at least he found it.
Well, you know, and when I started with you, Dale, and you came to me and said, Bob, I just met this guy at a VBA meeting. He's a real estate guy, and he wants in. I went, yeah, right, sure. He wants to be on the air, right, okay. Well, tell him we want X number of dollars, and he did. He ponied up, folks. He had that check in our hands, and in a couple of days, he really meant what he said, that he was going to be not just on the air, but that he was going to be giving a voice to the vet, which is exactly what we are all about here at Veterans Radio. And right now on line one, and by the way, folks, if you have a Gary comment or something, an anecdote that you want to relay to ourselves and to the audience, 1-800-573-7825. And on line one with me right now is Gary's brother, Ben. Ben, how are you?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm doing as good as can be, right? But before I get all choked up, I thought I'd tell a quick story about Gary. He was 16, and several of us guys used to go up into Canada hunting and fishing a lot. So this one trip, we got a flat tire, and we left Gary behind, being the youngest, while we all drove to get the tire fixed. And when we got back, a couple hours later, Gary was up in a tree. And, Gary, what are you doing up there? He said, a moose chased me up here. It's right over there. Well, we all laughed and talked about that for a number of years, about Chicken Gary. And then about 6 years or so after that, we made another trip, and darned if I didn't get chased up a tree by a moose.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, so so we sat around the campfires and traded stories back and forth about that, and of course Gary got the biggest laugh of all on that one. But I just wanted to thank you guys, and I'm looking forward to hearing my brother's voice again. God bless you all.
God bless you too. Thank you for calling, Ben.
Okay.
Well, I was just thinking, Bob, when he was mentioning Gary laughing, it would be that guffaw that you know that Gary would have when he was really you know, laughing at something. It's just a big, loud laugh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And infectious. You know, you couldn't help but, you know, join right in with him.
Amen.
Amen. And Vance and John, both are with me here in the studio, and they're both shaking their heads. By the way, folks, if you have a comment, something that you want to say about Gary, his life, give us an anecdote, give us a call at 1-800-573-7825. That's 1-800-573-7825. Dale, are you still with us out there?
I'm still out here. Yep.
Okay. Well, what are some of the things that have changed for you in the past year?
Well, for a lot more work.
Yes. We didn't realize that, did we?
No.
No.
Because, well, as Vance pointed out, you know, Gary knew everybody, and you know, because we would run up against our deadline, and we'd say, oh my gosh, I don't have anybody to talk to, and it's Thursday night, and say, Gary, we don't have anybody, and the next morning, he's got a whole program put together with somebody from I don't know where. And it was just, I'm not usually at a loss for words, but, missing him, missing the camaraderie, the excitement that he had for what we were doing. I think that's, if John put it right, that we had to figure out how to get that energy going again.
Yes.
And when we think about what all of our missions, all the four of us that are talking right now, plus all the different organizations, our mission is to make sure that these veteran stories get out and that these veterans are taken care of. And I think, Bob, you and I both have agreed that it's no longer the program, it's about the veterans.
It's about the veterans and about our mission to give a voice to the dead. I do want to say my own little anecdote with Gary, that it was one Friday, I think, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening, and my guest canceled. Nothing. I had nothing. And I called you. I don't know where you were. You were probably out dancing or something. But I went and I called Gary. I got nobody. Tomorrow he said, okay, leave it up to me. Now, this is 24 hours before we're going to go on the air, folks. And what did he do? Within a couple of hours, he had a complete program all put together. That man lived on the internet. He actually got John Voight's phone number. You believe that? I mean, do you know what the Inquirer would pay for that? Yeah. Personal? Yes. And Gary was interviewing him, folks. John Voight was on the air, and Gary had met him at a conference, at a Vietnam Veterans of America conference, and John Voight wanted to go on the air, wanted to talk about what he did during the Vietnam War and what he was involved in, and he wanted to sort of set the record straight. So here's Gary. Gary put all that together and had his personal cell phone number, actually, and we called John Voight, 0600, San Diego, California, 6 o'clock out in California, and I remember Gary was interviewing him, and when we went to the break, that Gary says, I can barely hear the guy. I just barely can hear the guy. And so we were telling John Voight through Gary, speak up. And he says, I can't. My wife is sleeping in the same room. Well, Gary and Dale and myself, you imagine that? Here's a world-renowned actor, and Gary put this all together, and the guy's calling us from a hotel room, and his wife is sleeping on the bed next to him. So, what happened? He had to go to go in the bathroom to finish the program. And Gary and I always thought about that. I think that was one of Gary's highlights. And okay, we got line number two, right? And that's Joan Ford? No, that's Gene, right? Okay. Gene Lilly, line number two. Gene, tell us your story.
Yes, Gary is my brother, and Gary was very proud of his Scottish heritage. He was a member of the St. Andrews Society, and St. Andrews is having their picnic today. And I'm sure Gary would be attending that picnic.
Oh, I'm sure he is, looking down. Mm-hmm.
And so, Gary, Scots, wahey. Thank you.
Thanks, Gene.
Yes. And we want, Gene, you're still there?
Yes.
We want to thank you very much for calling in and giving us that comment. You have a blessed day.
Thank you for your program.
Thanks, Gene.
If you go to the Veterans Radio website, veteransradio.net, you will see a picture of Gary, because I put that up there for the flyer for today's program, and he is in his Scottish uniform.
Oh, yeah. He would show up at the big boy in his kilt. Now, you have... How about that, Dale? We remember that? And, I mean, and boy, you better not smile.
No, very serious.
And he had those bony legs
and a knife in his sock.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, we have now on line one from Dearborn Heights, a very frequent listener and a supporter of Veterans Radio, Ms. Joan Ford. Joan, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Bob. It's so good to be able to to speak with all of you. It's hard to believe that it's already a year, and I remember that that show so well. I was so shocked to learn of Gary's death, and I'm so sorry still for all of you and for all the listeners and for all the veterans for their loss. And I first met Gary there at the studio. I was invited to come in and watch one of the shows. And he seemed a little bit concerned about, you know, why I was there. But he was so thankful that I was interested in the show, and he was so thankful for my donations. And later on, I had seen Gary at some of the football games, Army versus Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always with his mic, and it was actually difficult to try to approach him because I wanted to introduce him to some of my friends. And but we just couldn't, we didn't have time, so unfortunately I wasn't able to do that. But he was just so into what he did. He just loved Veterans Radio, and he loved being able to help the veterans. And I'm very thankful that I did get to meet him. The last time I saw Gary, we were in Ohio at the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War rally. And I actually sat next to him at the mass that was put on by the youth group there in Ohio. And I thought that was just extraordinary that that would be the last time that I would see him. But I later did email him about his, what I think was his best show that he did with Dr. Eric Amberg. And I remember emailing him, telling him I thought it was such a great interview, that he had conducted it so well. And I believe that show was 30 years in the making, if I recall correctly. And he emailed me back, and he said to me that I was good for his soul.
Ooh, that's nice. Yeah.
That was probably one of the kindest remarks that anyone has ever made to me. So I want to thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to know Gary, and my condolences to everyone.
Well, thank you very much, Joan, and thank you for calling, and God bless you.
God bless you.
Bob?
Yes.
This is Dale. I just got an email from Tim Driscoll. I'd like to read if I could.
Please do.
Tim Driscoll is a member of the VBA Chapter 310 also, and it says, "Hi, Dale, I will not be able to call in today, but here are my thoughts this morning. Our prayers are with Gary's family and Veterans Radio family. What could be so sad as to lose our Veterans Radio professor? Hold on. I know where he has gone. It's where he took all of us each Saturday morning with the Veterans Radio show into our country's wartime history. One can find Gary reading wartime history, reviewing veteran stories. He's in the everyday words of his brother and sister veterans, in countless realtor transactions all over the state, and in veterans magazines across the nation. You will find him in your memories of his devil's advocate arguments. He gave us arguments that made all of us veterans think. But today he is in our bitter, heartfelt tears and awful sadness of his beloved VVA Chapter 310. Gary, we will miss you long time. He knew us all. Tim and Kathy Driscoll and family." Thank you, Tim.
Says it pretty well there, Bob.
I think that says it all. Yes, it does. Dale, would you stay on the line, please?
Sure.
Okay. And we'll be right back after this moment.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admission at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi. We'll be right back.
was Mr. Michael J. Martin, a very special songwriter and singer that, that Gary was involved with. And I believe he did, they did some fundraising, right, for Michael J. Martin?
Bob, one of the many things Gary did, he brought Michael Martin up here to help us raise money at a fundraiser at the Ypsilanti Freight House. And it must have been 5, 6, 7 years that he did that, when we were, we'd have an annual fundraiser to put together money for the Perpetual Care Fund for our Washtenaw County Vietnam Memorial. And Gary funded bringing Michael up here. And he'd make good use of Michael because he'd take him, you know, down to the Saline High School and share music with the school, high school students down there. He'd take him down to the Dearborn VVA chapter. And Gary made sure that Michael was heard by as many people as possible. And Michael had, has quite the song, quite the story to tell. Currently, Michael's his health is not the best, and we should all pray for Michael. I talked to him just before we went on the air, and he, we can hardly, he could hardly speak. You know, he has some issues, and he passed on his best to all of us, and he'll be listening to this on the Veterans Radio Archive soon, when he's able to do that. So we pass on our best to Michael.
Dale? Do we still have Dale on there? Yeah, we do. Dale?
Yep, I'm still here. In fact, I got another email with this technology. This is from Lynn Liston, and says, I'm probably not doing this right, but it says, you don't have to read this on the air, but this is a personal note from me to you wonderful guys. I have not forgotten you for a minute. I wanted to thank you guys for today's program and for being so important in Gary's life. I'll be listening. It will be wonderful to hear Gary's voice and to hear the stories his friends tell. It would be a little too tearful for me to call in today. But please know that I deeply appreciate all that you continue to do for Gary's memory and for all veterans everywhere. I know you still miss him terribly, as do I, but he left a wonderful legacy of service and friendship, of which you, Veterans Radio, are a very important part. Thank you very much, Lynn.
Well, I think that, yeah, that's very heartfelt and sort of sums it up for a lot of us. Dale, can you stay on the line while we listen to this interview?
I'll stay as long as I can, sure.
Okay, and the same with Darlene. We'll get to you after the first break. Right now, we want to hear the story of Gary, spoken by Gary, on June the 5th, 2010.
All right, now is everybody ready, folks? Because we're going to be talking to our partner and also veteran, Gary Lilly, who was a Navy CB, and I can't even understand all of the numbers that the Navy uses for their various and sundry designations. But Gary was deployed in 1966 to Chulai, Vietnam, as the military would say, and I'll let him talk about how many hours he put in, more than anybody else. But it's MCB3, better known as Better Than Best. And Gary, as we say to all of our guests, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad that you could fit it into your very busy schedule and that we were, you know, we had to tear you away from your book tour. I'm only kidding, folks. All right, Gary, let's go back, in your case, many years, and find out, how did you get into the Navy anyway? How did that happen?
Well, like a lot of people, the draft was coming up, and I thought I didn't want to be in the Army. My brother had been in the Army over in Germany, and he talked about walking around in mud as a combat engineer. And I thought, I don't want to walk in mud, so I joined the Navy Reserves. I did want to do 2 years, not four. So they put me in an intelligence unit based on the testing that they give you, and I had to prove them wrong. So I transferred to the Seabees. And then after volunteering for Vietnam, I found myself walking around in mud over the tops of my boots with my feet rising off, and I really thought I'd made a wise decision there.
And this was, what year did you join the Navy?
Joined the Reserves in 1963, went active in February of 1965, and was separated in about the 1st of February in 1967, discharge follow a few years later.
Okay, so you still had your basic six-year obligation,
right.
Reserve obligation,
yep.
That type of thing. And so when you went to Vietnam, did you fly or did you go by boat?
We flew in a four-engine prop plane that leaked so much oil out of each engine that the Arab sheikhs had to be grinning from ear to ear. And you realize how big the Pacific Ocean is when you're going around in a prop plane that's probably less than 200 miles an hour, which breaks down at every stop. Our first stop from Point Magoo, which is just north of Los Angeles, was San Francisco, where we broke down for 8 hours. Now, we'd already been delayed for 2 days because the plane was broken down waiting for parts. Our next stop was Hawaii. We broke down for 18 hours. Next stop was Wake Island, and they're getting better. I think we only broke down for about 4 hours. Next stop was Guam, and we were all shocked we didn't break down. Next stop, Chu Lai.
And Chu Lai is where in Vietnam?
Chu Lai is about 85 miles south of Da Nang, which is one of the better known names. It's was in an area called I Corps for the military.
This is in the northern quadrant of South Vietnam.
Correct.
Up against the DMZ.
Right. Well, we were quite a ways from the DMZ. We were in the southern part of I Corps. So, that would have put us about three-quarters of the way at least up, maybe four-fifths of the way up from South Vietnam, right on a beautiful spot on the coast. There's my John Wayne picture on the screen right now. Everybody had to have one of those.
For those of you that want to see what Gary looked like 112 years ago, you can click on to our website at veteransradio.net and click on the screen, and you'll be able to see the pictures of what we've got going here. And radio, we can't paint a picture of how skinny he really was. But moving right along, so we're in Chu Lai, which is, did you say it was on the beach?
We were right on the beach. We had a fabulous spot. We were supposed to camp inland, and they had assigned us or whatever they do a spot to set up our camp. And the day my squad arrived, there was a squad in there ahead of us. They didn't have any bunkers, which was just a circle of sandbags, or any wire up around us. And we just pitched tents. General purpose medium squad size tent, 14 guys.
Right.
And we set up our tents. And the night that we arrived and set up, a battle started in the precise spot we were supposed to be in. A Marine was awarded the Medal of Honor. That's how fierce the battle was.
Wow.
And so there we were sitting over on the coast in a beautiful spot. And I would look out and think to myself, under any other circumstances, what a beautiful spot.
Well, we'll come back to that later on when we talk about, because you did go back to Vietnam last year. And but let's talk about what your job was over there. What did the CBs do?
Well, we built things. We were there supporting the Marines. The I Corps was totally a Marine area at that time, area of responsibility. We built a lot of housing. That photograph that's being shown right now, I was up on a hooch nailing down steel roofs, and that was the hottest day that by sheer chance that I ever spent over there. And it was 138 degrees where we were. And what it lacked in temperature, it made up for in humidity, as
that's
you well
true.
Know.
That's true.
And now this photograph, that sun is reflecting right up on the steel. We had to have it nailed down within about a minute because then it was too hot to touch. And if we set a tool down and the sun moved or the shade moved and the tool was in the sun, we'd have to kick it over into the shade and let it cool off before we could pick it up. This is no lie. Every time I see a chicken in a rotisserie, I think back to these days. I know how the chicken feels.
We have all these images that we put in our own heads or over that. If you've got a question for Gary, we're talking with Gary Lilly, one of the partners of Veterans Radio, and what his experiences were like in Vietnam, give us a call at 877-573-7825. All right, so we're up in Chu Lai. We're on the beach, but you're building buildings in 130-degree heat. And what else did you do while you were there?
Well, we did a lot of things for the civilians. Drilling wells. I wasn't on a well drilling team, but there are four companies in a CB battalion plus headquarters company. One would be basically builders. That would be Delta Company, which I was in, carpenters. Steel worker, Charlie Company would be steel workers and builders both. Bravo Company. I'm going backwards. Story of my life. Bravo Company is utility people, plumbers, electricians, and that's where the well drillers would be. And Alpha Company would be equipment operators and mechanics. So I was in Delta Company. We were all builders, carpenters. We did everything from building those hooches like I was nailing on in that one photograph, which were 16 by 32 foot huts that on stilts that people lived, a squad would live in. Right now there's a photograph up. We're building a building which I think became the first hospital at Chulai. It was during the early part of the monsoons. There was a lot of mud there. It doesn't look like there's a lot of mud because we're standing on boards so that we could walk around, but actually the mud we were in was over the top of the boots.
To remind our civilian audience out there that the monsoons in Vietnam were about 6 months out of the year, where it would rain every day, right around 3 o'clock at least where I was, and it would rain like you've never seen rain before. And all the pallets that would be put out, we would make these, and you probably did the same, they would make these walkways so you could get from one part of your company area to the other part of the company area, and then the monsoon rains would come that afternoon and all the pallets would wash away. And you'd have to go out and rebuild your sidewalks.
I belong to Vietnam Veterans of America, and we do parades and outdoor events and all that. And anytime it's threatening, I'll just say it never rains on Vietnam vets. We've seen rain, and it does not occur in North America.
Not like that. Not like that, that's for sure. So, all right, so you're building all these other things over there, and you were there, when were you in Vietnam?
1966.
Pretty much that whole year?
Yes. We arrived the last day of February, first day of March, I forget which, and left on December 7th. A CV tour is a little shorter than everybody else's tour. It would be 8 month deployment, unless you're on the advance party, which I was, in which case it's a 9 month deployment. You get there early and build a camp for the battalion that's coming. We packed a lot into it. During their weaker moments, the World War II CBs would tell us that they were never called on to do what we were being called on to do. And I learned that in our deployment that we put more materials in place than any CB battalion had ever done, and it's only been equaled once since, and that was by my same battalion the following year. We built everything from those hooches to help build the Chulai airstrip. And we're going to have a photograph coming up of a job site at night with cranes and all that. That was a triple box culvert for the crosswind runway and taxiways. That's camp at night with the flares popping. The job, we were called into formation, which is never a good thing when the Seabees, and it was at the end of August, and they said that the monsoons were coming and the Marines needed close-in air support. The Chulai airstrip, which was 9,000 feet long, was well underway, and they needed a 3,500-foot crosswind runway, reinforced concrete, very thick, and the taxiways. And first thing that had to happen is a swamp had to be drained. So I was on the job that went 24 hours a day, 6 at night to 6 in the morning, building this triple-box culvert. They said it would take 45 days to do it. They gave us 23, and we did it in 13 days. I watched the civilian crew do an almost identical job a few years ago. It was a little bit smaller, as a matter of fact. The snow was flying at the end of winter when they started, and the snow was flying at the beginning of the next winter when they finished.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We're going to be coming up at the bottom of the hour here. I've got a question for Gary about, or you're a former CB and you'd like to get your comments in here, give us a call at 877-573-7825. Tell me about, real quickly in a minute, what's your best memory of your time in Vietnam?
The best memory, I would say, besides the guys you work with, the high spirits and the character of the people you work with, the Vietnamese people, I came to admire them a great deal for their industry, and it's showing up like down in Louisiana now, the shrimp boaters are and a lot of these restaurants, you know, they're so successful. and you'd see the industry of the Vietnamese people and living their lives with the war going on around them, you know, for about 50 years of their life. I just came to really like them, other than when they were shooting at us.
Well, yeah, well, a lot of that time was the North Vietnamese, not necessarily right. All those in the South, although that was one of the problems. We're talking with Gary Lilly, and we're going to be coming up on our break at the bottom of the hour here. If you've got a question, give us a call, 877-573-7825. When we get back, I'm going to ask Gary about some of the people that he has met since Vietnam. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. We're talking.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I join the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
I kill most children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on WDEO 990 AM, part of the Ave Maria Network.
This is my country, land of my birth.
This is my country, and this is our rebroadcast of the Gary Lilly interview that started right here in Veterans Radio, June 5th, 2010. Boys, I have John Kinzinger, Vance McCrum. You have something that you want to say?
Oh, Bob, you know, one thing that we haven't talked about is Gary was a little mischievous.
Just a little. just a little.
I remember back when it was the first anniversary of the our entrance into Iraq during this current Iraq war, and the city of the leftist city of Ann Arbor was putting on a big peace rally, anti-war rally, and there was a big full-page ad in the newspaper, and Gary calls me and he says, John, he says, what are we going to do? I said, Gary, there's only two of us. We can go stand on a corner with a sign, you know, that says support our troops or something. And we hashed it out, and we hashed it out. And finally, we came up with the idea of flying a banner over the top of the peace rally, you know, behind a plane, you know, and it was support the troops. And we did that anonymously. And Gary was known for doing things like that. And
I heard the story about Ford Motor Company. And the flag. Which maybe sometime if you see John or Vance or myself or Dale, we'll fill you in because we are friends with Ford. And
yes, right.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things, Bob, you know, people don't know everything Gary was involved in. I stood by him in a lot of things. And one of the things that he really was interested in is educating the youth of what Vietnam was all about. It was about, you know, and the people who served. You know, it's not the politicians who serve as the people who serve. And Gary used to always join us in talks at the high schools here in Washtenaw County. And, you know, one thing I always pride Gary in is there was no stolen valor in Gary. He was who he was, and he didn't pretend to be a war hero or anything else. You know, he did his job just like the rest of us, and he had the opportunity to do all of that, but that would have been a disgrace, and he's just a great man.
I think one thing that really stuck in my mind with Gary was the amount of effort and research he did when he interviewed his guests prior to the interview. You could tell when you were listening to one of his programs that he did, I don't believe in 110% because I don't think he can do that, but Gary could do 110%. And I listened to him for several years as I record and edit and upload the programs up to the Veterans Radio website, and I always was amazed at the amount of effort that he took to research his guest.
Dale?
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. I think that it's really important. You can tell how much that goes back to that passion thing, how much passion he put into his programs so that, you know, that people could get the true story is what he wanted to make sure that got out. I also wanted to remind our listeners that are listening right now that if you go back to the archives of June 5th, 2010, the webcast is up there, so you'd be able, if you hit that replay, you'd be able to see the pictures that he's talking about during this interview. So I think that would be kind of important if you wanted to check out what he looked like when he was, I don't know, about 110 pounds, it seemed like.
Yeah, when he had his kilt down, he looked like he was about 60 pounds, but that's all right. Folks, we're going back to the interview with Gary Lilly, and Dale, please stay on the line, and I have John and Vance with me, and Darlene, stay on the line, we'll get to you after the interview. Nina, hit it.
We're talking with Gary Lilly, one of our partners on Veterans Radio, and about his experiences in Vietnam, and now I want to ask you a little bit about your experiences when you came home, and what happened to you?
Well, I thought it was a unique story till I heard that it was pretty common. And I don't want to slam the World War II guys because I think
we can't do that.
No,
they've come around.
The bulk, they've come around, and the bulk of them probably always were. But they rejected us. And first night driving back with a friend of mine, we stopped at an American Legion, and I had an image of the guys in there calling us over to the table, hey, how was it, son, and all that, and said they drank their beers and walked out angrily that we would be allowed in. The guy I was driving back with was a member of the American Legion. His dad got him to sign up. And they, on the way out, the one guy said to the bartender, you know, come on up to the VFW when you get off. They might let their kind in the Legion, but they'll never let them in the VFW. That's where the real war veterans are. And he stood at the far end of the bar after that, never talked to us, and, you know, my buddy and I sat there and finished our beer and walked out. It was quite a shock.
It's been lucky that they didn't have one of those Saturday night fights.
You know, you hear that about, you know, the people that are spit on and they don't do anything. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, my experience was you come back extremely tired, and you come back just, it catches you so much by surprise, something like that. And then, of course, the protest movement. I moved to Ann Arbor after a couple of years, and I was very confused.
We should tell people where you're from originally.
Originally, I'm from Detroit.
Okay.
I was an immigrant neighborhood in Detroit. It was blue collar.
Then you lived up north in the.
No, he was from Brightmoor. All you listeners out there, right, Gary, babe?
Brightmoor.
Yeah, we're on Finkel. Finkel and Burt Road and Redford High School. Yeah.
Exactly. When I came back to Detroit, I didn't realize why I was so restless, and I moved up north for a while, and then I got restless up there, and I moved back, but I didn't want to move back to Detroit. I had a friend living in Ann Arbor, and I'd met some of his friends, so I moved to Ann Arbor. First night back, there was a protest down at the university, and a buddy of mine said, hey, let's go down and watch, and we went down, and there was tear gas, and thousands of people, and you know it's very confusing, and to hear the baby killer accusations and all that, I became convinced, and I've learned a lot of other guys have too, that I happen to be around a whole bunch of good guys, but just over the hill were all the evil guys.
Absolutely, yeah. Always the bad guys were elsewhere.
Yeah, and I became convinced, and that we were war criminals. And after I joined, and I ended up a fifth-a-day drinker, and there was a real, you know, event that happened, a real positive, that caused me to never have another drink again, and never want another drink again. It was just like that. I stopped, swore I'd never have another drink, and I'd live the rest of my life in a way that would honor Vietnam vets and not insult the ones that died over there. So then I decided I'm going to become a student. I want to find out what it was I lived through. And I've become a student of the war. Met a lot of amazing people since then. But I did learn that Vietnam vets have statistically more character and more success than anybody else in our generation. Just the opposite of what you'd think.
Yeah, we didn't see any movies about the true stereotypic Vietnam vet who went just very similar to the World War II vet. You know, they went home. They went to school, they raised families, they had jobs, and so on and so forth. And that based on the numbers, they weren't any really any different than World War II or Korean veterans.
Exactly. There was a Kevin Costner movie, and it was called, the title was The War, which did depict that, and it was nobody watched it.
Right.
It wasn't very successful. And since then, I've met astounding people. From Duncan Hunter, he was a presidential candidate, but this goes back about to almost 20 years ago. Over coffee, and he told us that he was the chairman of the House Select Committee on POW/MIA Affairs at the time. It was 1990, and he told us about the intelligence that we have, the hard intelligence about our POWs of ours that were left behind, shipped up to the Soviet Union for interrogation and never seen again. Same thing happened in Korea. So to sit and talk with people like that with the astounding knowledge, to somebody like Young Kral, whose father was the ambassador for the National Liberation Front, which was the Viet Cong. The Viet Cong was their military arm, and he was the ambassador to the Soviet Union, where he arranged for all the arms and ammunition for both North Vietnam and the National Liberation Front. And she became a spy for the CIA and the FBI. The stories she has to tell are just amazing.
I can't remember the name of her book right now. I'm thinking, Tears as They Fall, or
A Thousand Tears Falling.
A Thousand Tears Falling. It's amazing, the story that she tells about being living in South Vietnam with a father who was basically in the North the whole time. Real quickly, tell me about the Christmas bombing.
Well, and I've had it confirmed by somebody else since then. He told her husband when she arranged a meeting through the CIA where they could spend a week with their father. He flew over to Britain, and they flew over to Britain, and they were able to. She didn't know how her husband and her dad would get along because her husband flew bombing missions over the North, and they were like two warriors. That they'd go off for long talks. He told them that the Christmas bombing of 1972, had we kept it up three more days, they had already made the decision to surrender. They had written the surrender speech, talk, whatever, and sent word out to the into the combat areas that at a certain time on a certain day, somebody would come out from each unit with a white rag tied to a bayonet in surrender, and then suddenly the bombing stopped. And it was the protesters that stopped the bombing. And that's one person, but a couple of weeks ago I got a phone call from one of the guys on my email list for Veterans Radio. Can't remember exactly why he called, but he's a 73-year-old Vietnamese that was born in Hanoi and moved to the South and ended up flying missions over the North himself. He went back to Vietnam and was had to worry about arrest, but his mother was sick, and he hadn't seen her in 40-some years. So he went back, and his wife's uncle was one of the six guys that was sent down south, Colonel Vui Tin and some others, to accept the surrender of South Vietnam. He told the uncle told him and his wife that they had made the decision to surrender on Christmas Day, or in 72 hours during the Christmas bombing, but we stopped the bombing. I called Young Kral and told her about that, and I asked him, do you know Young Kral? And he said, I've heard of her, but I don't know her. And I told that to Young Kral, and you couldn't believe the excitement, because here it was confirmed by somebody else.
It's nice to verify, what things that happened 40 years ago. Sometimes we have a tendency to think, did I really remember it the right way, and how does it go? Well, Gary, you're very involved in veterans affairs and veteran service organizations, and we've got about 2 minutes left as I'm going through there. Is there anything you'd like to tell the other veterans out there that are listening to us today?
Well, there's a couple of things. The first one, if you've got PTSD or anything, go in and make a claim for disability. You have earned it. I mean, my pay when I was in Vietnam was a little under $100 a month, and that was for 86-hour weeks and plus combat pay. This is prepaid things that we earned. Go in and get the disability. File for it. The other one is join veterans organizations. because the main purpose for veterans organizations is not to sit around and drink and tell old war stories, which is helpful to the because you're talking to people that have been there and can understand what you're talking about. But it's to lobby for veterans' health care and for the care for these younger vets today. And we never forget the dead, but work for the living. And the founding principle of Vietnam Veterans of America is never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. The Congress people, they look at numbers. Well, how big is your organization? And I'm so proud. I'm a life member of the American Legion, the VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and a couple of other things. But my heart's with Vietnam Veterans of America, and this group is intense and very active on Capitol Hill. And the main thrust has always been health care, and it was POW, MIA, and such, you know, and Agent Orange is still a big thing because it's used in this country.
Right, yeah, we're still starting to, and again, as we always say, we're running out of time. Right. We're down to 15 seconds. Thank you, Gary, for letting us interview.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Vietnam by Jimmy Cliff. That was another one of Gary's favorites. Well, you know what? We're almost out of time. John and Vance, thank you very much for joining me here in the studio today. And your comments were well welcome. Darlene, we've got about 30 seconds. Can you say something in 30 seconds?
Sure, Bob. I really saw a contrast with Gary Lilly from the get-go. He's a man with a kind and gentle manner. Mentioned no words about having a heart to help the veterans. And veterans are not common people, and like my dad, a World War II Marine, who did not distinguish between past leaving the military service. Veterans are people who commit themselves to an unselfish cause, men and women, who put the needs of others before themselves. That's the kind of man Gary Lilly was.
Well, thank you very much, Darlene. You were so patient in waiting, and you have a blessed day.
Amen.
Okay. Dale.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. We've got 50 seconds. You know how that goes. What's your final? Yeah, that's right. But I know hours go fast. Gary, you know, he's standing over here, right? Come on, guys, get it tight.
No, I want to thank John and Vance for coming in and just the people that have responded to our request for stories about Gary. And then thank you and... you know, I'll let you end the program, but don't forget, you know, what have you done to help a vet today?
Amen to that. Okay, Dale, thank you very much. Have a blessed day. Next week, right here on Veterans Radio, we're going to be having the Enterprise, the second part of a series on aircraft carriers, the Enterprise, the new one that's just been deployed. And right now, this is Bob Gould saying goodbye from Veterans Radio, and God bless. I recall with love my friend and colleague, Gary Lilly, who no longer walks this earth. I am grateful for his life spirit, for the gift of his life, for the experience of the companionship and memories which endure. I can now cherish them forever. May the spirit of living, of life, comfort me and all who mourn, granting strength to those beyond sorrow, sustaining us in our grief. Solemn words are spoken, declaring faith in each generation's link to the next, connecting us with all beings lived. May all who observe a loved one's death and those who mourn find comfort and worthy memories. I now rise standing with all who have ever mourned as one voice, renewing faith for each one, declaring thanks for our world while praising the spirit of life, lives lived, alive now, and yet to be born.